This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Next on Plains FM, host Tina Dacom-Luke interviews inspiring women on This Is Who We Are. Welcome, I'm Tina Dacom-Luke and this is Who We Are. Recently, I've been pondering what makes a habitual act become detrimental or out of balance for us. I was 16 and I lit a cigarette at a friend's house off her stovetop. I felt quote-unquote cool and enjoyed the drag more than anticipated. Coming from a family with addiction issues, I made a decision in that moment never to smoke again. What young Tina didn't know, though, was that addiction, a crux or a self-soothing habit, can take other forms, be it relationship dependency, food, alcohol, risk-taking behaviours. These all can become unhealthy when out of balance or when used to suppress feelings. Many consider addiction to be a problem of personal weakness, initiated for self-gratification and continued because of lack of willpower. It's deeper than that. Recently, the notion that pleasure-seeking drives addiction has been challenged, and it is now thought by scientists and clinicians that people engage in potentially addictive activities to numb themselves or escape discomfort, be that emotional or physical. We refer to addiction in everyday conversation. Who hasn't heard of someone, if not themselves, reference being a chocoholic or workaholic, like it's the new baseline normal? When my children were at primary school, we mothers used to refer to the hours from 5 to 7 as the witching hours, and a number of mums would be counting down to 5 o'clock so they could have a socially accepted glass or two of vino while cooking dinner to relax them for the night routine ahead. It was joked about as their sanity and the thing that got them through. Drinking in New Zealand is a cultural norm, and we celebrate our coming of age with drinking in excess. Our uni days are highlighted by alcohol-fueled gatherings, and sports events are sponsored and encourage alcohol consumption. At what point does the consumption of something that is harmful to our system in excess become an issue? My guest today has travelled a courageous path in the last few years. She recognised things had got out of whack and made a sharp course alteration. She has just released another book on her journey and what she has now realised about the targeting of her demographic by the alcohol marketing machine. So grab a drink, pull up a chair, get comfy, and I will introduce her after this song.
I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. And the best thing you ever done for me is to help me take my life less seriously. It's only life after all. Yeah. Well, darkness has a hunger that's insatiable. And lightness has a call that's hard to hear. And I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. And I sail my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm crawling on your shores. And I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountains. There's more than to these questions pointing me in a crooked line, and the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to find. Yeah, closer I am to find. Yeah. And I went to see the doctor of philosophy with a see a big, great movie. He graded my performance. He said he could sit through me. I spent 4 years prostrate to the higher mind. Got my paper and I was free. I went to the doctor. I went to the mountains. I looked to the children. I drank from the fountains. There's more than one answer to these questions, pointing me in a crooked line. And the less I seek my source for some definitive, closer I am to fire. Closer I.
Lotta Dan, so lovely to talk to you this morning. How is Wellington? Is it windy?
It's not windy today. It is sunny and still and beautiful.
Oh, it sounds gorgeous. I am quite a fan of Wellington. I love the cultural aspect there, and I've only been there once when it's windy. So, yeah, I could say that I think that it's probably nicer than here today.
So, I mean, Lotta, they do say you can't beat Wellington on a good day.
Mind you, do they say that about every city in Christchurch? I'll let you have that one, because I think we're the Four Seasons in One Day city, aren't we?
Yeah.
So it's really lovely to have this opportunity to chat with you. What's the name of the book that you've just released?
The new book is called The Wine O'Clock Myth, The Truth You Need to Know About Women and Alcohol.
And what is that truth?
That so much of what we believe about the positive benefits of alcohol just simply aren't true. And I think a lot of women know that deep down, and I'm just really hoping to open some eyes more into, you know, that alcohol's not doing great things for us all the time, and that we are being targeted and it is bringing us down and disconnecting us.
How did it make you feel when you began to really see how entrenched that is?
I honestly felt like I was in the twilight zone.
Mm-hmm.
So it was after I quit drinking myself, and I'd been sober for a good sort of 2 years, and I'd done the really hard work of like looking at myself and healing myself, you know, starting to heal myself emotionally.
Yeah.
And being sober was getting a bit easier, and I started relaxing. And that's when I started looking around with these wide open eyes going, this is a madness. Like, why is this stuff presented everywhere like it's harmless when it's not for everyone? Like, some people can have a casual relationship with alcohol, but a lot of us can't. And yet that is not reflected anywhere in our society. So I just started thinking, this is crazy. And the more I went on and the more I lived sober and looked around and talked to people who were struggling, I thought this is actually really damaging. And you know, we need to be more aware of it. So that's why I wrote this book.
I think that's a fabulous idea. And awareness is always, you know, we can't change something that we're not aware of or that we're asleep to because we're so used to it being that way that we accept it. How comfortable has it been for people to begin to have this conversation with you?
Oh, it's not comfortable for people. I mean, it's a very uncomfortable thing to face up to the fact that you're struggling with something that is promoted as being harmless and fun.
Yeah.
As alcohol is. And so it's really, really hard to really be honest with yourself and then do something about it. So a lot of people, when they reach out to me, they do it very quietly, anonymously, you know, secretly through private messages or emails or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're so brave because they're starting to be honest with themselves, let alone reaching out and talking to me. So, yeah, I mean, anyone who is at that point where they're so miserable and stuck that they're facing changing their alcohol habits is a hero. And anyone who moves on and actually does something about it is really, truly a legend.
Yes. And it's such a gift that they actually have you in an open platform, because I think I came across you a few years ago on Facebook under Mrs. D is Going Without. And I just thought, what an amazingly courageous woman. So I started following you, and a number of friends have actually probably only since this latest book came out, and I was kind of saying, oh, I'm going to talk to Lotta Dan, and they have talked to me and opened up about their own journeys. And I had a friend reach out, a Kiwi in Stockholm, to say that she has a friend that your books actually changed her life and gave her the power to take a wee look at herself and not beat herself up about it, because I think we do a wee number, don't we, on ourselves and don't realise that it's, it's everywhere around us.
Yeah, I mean, I just love that she's been able to get some strength from that. I mean, we need people in recovery like me to be open about it, because the problem with this environment we live in, which, you know, hails alcohol as the great way to live, basically, and deal with your stress and be a great hostess and have fun, and not acknowledging this dark side that it has, it really isolates people who are struggling. So you genuinely feel like you're alone and there's something wrong with you. You're weak, you're bad.
Yeah.
Because everyone else is having a great time. And so if people, and I'm not special, I'm just putting my hand up and being honest. And there's a lot more of us now who are putting our hands up and being honest, and saying, hey, it's actually not cool for me. It doesn't work with me at all. And I've taken it out of my life and I'm happy. And the more people that do that, the better, because then we'll reach the people who are struggling. And I say again, not everyone needs to stop drinking alcohol. There are those who can have a very casual, moderate relationship with that drug. But addiction is addiction, as you said in your intro.
Yeah.
A lot of us get hooked.
Mm.
And for those of us who do get hooked, we need an environment that's more conducive to us being open and being honest about our reality.
And I think the status quo thing, that pressure still exists in New Zealand. I know myself, because I maybe only drink a couple of times a year just because of liver issues, but I still feel that when I go to social events, I need to take something like kombucha or that I put into my glass so it actually looks like I'm drinking, so that the fact that I'm not drinking doesn't become the conversation. What's your experience been with that?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't get a lot of social pressure, but I think the reason for that is I'm so open about why I don't drink.
Yeah.
You know, it would take a pretty, you know, pretty callous person to put pressure on someone who's openly admitted, you know, alcohol brought me to my absolute knees. I was utterly miserable when I was drinking, and now I'm happy. For someone to then turn around and go, oh, go on, just have one. But I know that's not the way for everyone, and a lot of people do get pressure, and it's really hard, especially if you're living with someone who drinks regularly. You know, we do change when we get sober, and so there can be a transition, and it can be uncomfortable at times socially or with close family members. And I always just say to people, you know, hang in there. Your true friends, the people who really love you, will come around to the new non-drinking you, and those that don't, you know, it probably says more than them about you, to be honest.
That's so true. And we're highlighting a little bit around alcohol marketing here. Have you had any backlash around that?
No, and I was actually very nervous because I keep being told how powerful and scary the liquor lobby is.
Yeah.
But so far, so good. I don't know, maybe I'm hard to attack because I'm really grounding everything I say in my own experience, and any direct stuff that I'm saying about the liquor industry, which I do in this new book, it's very general, in a general sense. It's not, I've not named any companies. I just talk about big alcohol in general.
It's and carefully
we had
truthful.
A lawyer go through the manuscript to make sure that I was okay, and so far so good. If I was to maybe get more vocal, I don't know, maybe speak, you know, more towards policy changes and things, I'd be attacked, but they've left me alone for now.
And maybe that's because the information that you're giving is more to support women in general, so that we can make our own conscious decisions and have a look with open eyes around us and what's happening in society as opposed to targeting individual corporations. I think a gaggle of ladies would be quite scary too for any marketing machine to take on, because we do consume so much and we make so many decisions in a supermarket that to actually go after someone who's being brave and being honest, that could backfire.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I'm a bit confused about lobbying, to be honest. I know that it's done often in very kind of clever and subtle and ways. Like, for example, I was told that one of their tactics is to generate false profiles on social media so that they can put negative comments after any article that talks about changes. They can put a whole bunch of comments so that it looks like there's a groundswell against change.
Yeah.
You know, things like that are very hard to track.
But yes.
One of the things in this new book that I really wanted to put in there, which I think is really useful for people to be aware of, is the way that the liquor industry talks about personal responsibility and how isolating that is and damaging for people who are struggling, because they sort of take this line that if anyone has information about standard drink sizes, then they can moderate and control. And so they make themselves look good by trying to promote, you know, sensible drinking and standard drink sizes. And the problem with that is it flies in the face of everything we know about addiction.
Like, yes.
If someone is really, you know, addicted, as I was, no amount of knowledge about what a standard drink was or what the recommended limits were was going to make a blind bit of difference. When I had one, I wanted a lot.
So if we take you back to where you were when you hit rock bottom, what do you think helped you turn things around? What was the changing factor for you?
The absolute actual point of change, which I vividly remember sitting on the loo at 3 o'clock in the morning, miserable, in tears, having just hidden an empty bottle of wine the night before from my husband to conceal how much I'd been drinking. And that moment where I had the thought, I'm going to take alcohol out of my life. The thing that made the difference for me was I had this thought, which was, the problem isn't me, the problem is the alcohol. The problem isn't me, the problem is the alcohol. And with that, I was able to tap into a little bit of personal strength that I had left, because I was really on my knees in terms of having been awash with booze and trying and trying and trying to control it. And I really was not feeling good or strong or anything positive about myself. And so finding that little bit of strength inside myself, that was the key to for me to make that decision. But then the ongoing success is down to me connecting with people who are like me, and that's what keeps me sober today, the fact that I have a community of peers around me who understand what it's like.
So you would say that that is an important ongoing thing. Do you refer to yourself as still being in recovery? How do you feel around your relationship today with alcohol?
Yeah, I do consider myself to be in recovery, and what that means isn't that I'm desperately trying not to drink alcohol every day. Far from it. I don't crave it. I don't miss it. I don't have any pull towards alcohol at all. So it's not about that. Being in recovery for me means that I have made a commitment every single day to face up to everything that happens. And some of it hurts, you know, really.
Yes.
When we grieve for loved ones or we deal with really toxic people, whatever.
Mm.
But my commitment is that I'm going to face up every day to that in the raw, and being in recovery means I'm constantly looking after myself while I do that, and that changes, you know, there's certain things I have in place now to help me deal with emotional stuff, but some of them change and shift over time, and so being in recovery means it's an ongoing process of living as a fully emotional person, not numbing or avoiding anymore.
So it's an organic process that is continually asking you to stay present in the now with what is working for you and where you're heading and what your goals are.
It's very powerful. That's the perfect way of putting it.
I've come more from a background, I'm a therapist and primary school teacher, but my background around addiction has been looking at trauma. So I've been looking at trauma-informed side of what will obviously for some people and not all, addiction can be traced back to trauma in their younger years. So it's looking at the neuropathways in their brains and what's been wired and how we're rewiring. So what I'm hearing you say is what your journey of rewiring was. Of what, and it will be different for every person.
Yeah, but absolutely, it's. You were right in your intro when you said that a lot, if not all, of addiction is about numbing and covering up. Even though we might think, I thought my habit, honestly, was about me trying to be a fun time party girl.
Yeah,
fun lotter. That's all I wanted to be. Fun lotter, dancing and singing and laughing and happy. And I thought that's what my habit was about. It wasn't until I had to take the alcohol away and I got really emotional that I realized actually I've been trying to cover up my sadness.
Yes.
Everything I was doing was to avoid feeling sad, and I had deep sadness inside me from things that had happened in my past, and I had to learn how to be sad, and yeah, it was awful at first. Even now I cry a lot. I'm quite a watery person, but now I feel sadness, you know, it's there for a reason. Yeah. And every time I cry, it's so cliched, but every time I cry about something sad, I feel gentle towards myself, and it's actually lovely. I mean, even yeah, though it's sad, it's right. It's hard to explain. I can use words to explain it, but until you actually live it and feel yeah, it, you really understand, oh, this is why we're meant to feel sad sometimes. Mm. You know, sad things happen.
Yeah, I completely understand where you're coming from. And for me, I think one of the lessons I've learnt is how powerful gentleness is. So in the allowing of the expressing of those emotions, we're not wronging any part of ourselves, and we're just letting all of us be there and be heard. And that in itself, just to allow some tears, can be healing. But in New Zealand culture, we're often, especially, you know, I was talking to a man in a construction industry the other day, and he said, you know, we're literally told, you know, drink that cup of concrete each morning. So it's making it okay to be however we are in any given moment, so that you are fun lotter, but you're also so much more of a kaleidoscope and more than just that.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, it's a natural human instinct to want to push away uncomfortable emotions. I mean, you know, it is. And the problem we have is we live in a society where there's a drug which helps us do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what alcohol does. It helps us push away uncomfortable emotions, and it sits in the supermarket. It's cheap as chips.
Yes.
It's sold everywhere, marketed, advertised, hailed as being this great solution to life.
Mm.
And so it's no surprise we're literally soaking in it. And this is what I want people to just go, hang on a minute. Yes, when you have that first wine, you feel relaxed. Maybe you don't feel as stressed as you did. But after two or three, it's not doing you any favors. It's disconnecting you from how you feel. It's not actually helping you with your stress or sadness or whatever. And it's adding guilt, perhaps, and misery on top of that. Like, actually really look at it. Is it doing what you think it is?
Mm. So for someone who's just read your latest book, they're going to become aware of that. They're also going to become aware of the marketing that's targeted at them. They're going to be seeing everywhere around them how easy it is to get the alcohol, that it doesn't require a prescription, that it's not illegal, that it's accepted. What do they do?
Well, I always say the first step is to be honest with yourself, because you know the truth. You're the one who's waking up every morning knowing how you're feeling inside. You've got the inner dialogue. You know if things are perhaps getting to a point where you're maybe a bit worried. And then the next one is, like I say, reach out to people who understand, and that might not be your nearest and dearest, because we need people who get that it's not as simple as saying, oh, just have one if you're that worried.
Mm.
Or, you know, maybe stop for a week, and it's not that simple. So you need people who understand that. And, you know, we have lots of great outlets now for where you can find people. I run an anonymous online community, which is funded by the government, which we've got over 11,000 members now, where you can log in anonymously, and just, you don't even have to communicate to start with. You can just lurk and watch what other people are saying and just get the sense of, okay, I'm not alone feeling how I'm feeling, and maybe I could could actually do something about this. And then you start taking the first steps. And I mean, it's bumpy road. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Because you've got to, like we say, you've got to learn how to feel these emotions. But oh my goodness, it is so worth it.
Permission to lurk is really powerful because it can be really scary to begin to face this. So even being able to realise that that's a safe forum that you could step into and to have the time to realise that is great. So where can people get your book from and how can they contact you?
The book is available online, Mighty Ape or whatever, but it's also in every local bookstore and you should support
Fabulous.
Local. So.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a fan of that.
Or Wickles or Paper Plus or whatever. And online, I'm everywhere pretty much. So my Facebook is Mrs. D is Going Without, and on Instagram and Twitter, I'm Mrs. D Alcohol Free. And then this website that I just talked about, the government-funded community, is called Living Sober, and it's livingsober.org.nz.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the time you've taken, Lotta. Is there anything that you would like to say as we finish up? And I really feel like I'm going to have you back on at some point so we can go a bit deeper with this. It's such an important topic.
No, I just really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this stuff because I know there's a lot of big stuff happening in the world right now and a lot of people's lives, you know, they're struggling because of the economy downturn with COVID and there's big stuff happening, but I really just think alcohol is the elephant in our room and we need to have these conversations more because I know there's a lot of people who are feeling low because of their drinking and I really just want to reach out and help them.
And the more conversation we have, the more we desensitise the discomfort around this topic, which is a win-win too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Lovely. Thank you. A powerful and important topic today, and one that is going to be needed to be talked about for a long time yet, I feel. So let's band together and support each other, especially anyone who is journeying with this, because there's always more going on under the surface than we ever see. Kia kaha, Christchurch.